This week, we continue our look at the occult anatomy of man. We read part 4 of Manly P. Hall's famed work, The Infernal Worlds. A look at various colors and organs that are associated with man and alchemy, and how all of these things work together to create an alchemical fire within the individual. Topics on blood, the color red, blue, green, medical uses of colors are all discussed, and much, much more. Stay tuned.
Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Here's your host, Brother Robert Johnson.
Welcome back to the show. This is episode number 601. Thanks for joining us this week. I want to thank our contributors, fellows, producers, and legacy partners of the WCY podcast. Without you, this show cannot be possible in the way that we do it, creating weekly Masonic education for anyone interested, and we've been doing it since 2011, you guys. And it's all thanks to you that we've been able to create greater and greater content each and every year. All the donations that we get go right back into the show. If you're curious on how you can help support the WCY podcast, head on over to our website at WCYpodcast.com, click on Support the Show, and check out those various options, from monthly donations on PayPal or Patreon to making a one-time gift. We've also got a shop, as well as a bookstore, and other things like getting a tarot reading by yours truly, or even purchasing some handmade premium leather goods through Skull and Crown Limited. Presentations. Well, the next thing we have happening is going to be in August 19th, which is the John Skeen Celebration event. We've got new information coming out on that every single week. You can see it on Facebook. We've shared it on our Facebook wall, which is going to be a lot of fun. In the news, in 2019, we did MasonicCon Chicago. It was the first Masonic education-themed convention in Illinois that exclusively focused on education relative to Freemasonry in a multi-day format. We did a Friday night dinner, Saturday all-day speakers, Sunday half a day of speakers, and this was amazing. We had over 100 attendees gathered that all wore masks and all of the protocols to make this thing happen because it was during the pandemic. The speakers graced us that year were guys like Chris Hodapp, Jason Richards, John Ruark. We had Tim Hogan, Dago Rodriguez. I had Alex Powers, Maribel Martinez, Steve Harrison, Joe Martinez, and Brian Simmons. It was quite the lineup. A truly national conference for education. Well, we're doing it again this year. And instead of going through the podcast, as I had in the past, and the podcast selling the tickets and doing all that and trying to keep it all separate, Space Novum Lodge, the premier Masonic education lodge in the state of Illinois, of which I am one of the founders, has decided, and I did not bring this up, our worshipful master came to us, and they wanted to put on MasonicCon Chicago again this year in 2023. So we said okay, and we got to work. It became a lodge project. So to that end, it's Space Novum's MasonicCon Chicago 2023, and what can you expect? Well, we're going to have more of a focus on a more intimate and learning-inclusive environment. This year, we're concentrating on not only great speakers and topics, but also potential breakout sessions, as well as tons of fellowship and networking opportunities, and a lot more. The event is going to again be hosted at the iconic and historic Libertyville Temple in Libertyville, Illinois. The event is sponsored by Space Novum Lodge 1183, of course, WCY Media and the WCY Podcast. The organizations that we will have in attendance, we have the Lodge of Research, number 1843, FNAM of Wisconsin will be there. We're also going to have Lakes Chapter de Malay, as well as Job's Daughters International. And I even got word just yesterday that a new company, Three Knox Apparel, is going to be there as well. So we're very excited about that. Of course, we have sponsorship opportunities that you can check out on the website, MasonicConChicago.com. We also have our mailing list. So if you decide to swing on by the website. You can get your name on the mailing list, and that just goes only MasonicCon Chicago. So we don't sell that or anything. It's just a Google Sheets that we keep track of everything. We've got a list of recommended hotels, which is, of course, the Holiday Inn Express. And then also there's the Sonesta, Simply Suites Chicago Libertyville location. As far as speakers, well, we've got 7 speakers. We went a little bit smaller this year. And what we're going to do is we wanted to get a little bit of a local flair to this, because MasonicCon Chicago being hosted by Space Novum Lodge, a premier education lodge, we should have some of our own guys of the Space Novum Lodge be featured speakers. So we have done that. We've picked a couple out. But also in attendance, guys that we have announced already. Right Worshipful Brother Michael Jarzebek, past Junior Grand Warden, who's the chairman of Masonic Education Grand Lodge of Massachusetts. We've also got Brother Chad Kopensky. He's the past State Education Officer for the Grand Lodge of Ohio. We've got Robert William Marshall. He is a world-renowned historian, storyteller, Mason, all-around awesome guy. We've got Brother Right Worshipful Brother Spencer A. Hammond. He's a district education officer here in our first northeastern district of the Grand Lodge of Illinois. And he's also a past master of both Libertyville Lodge and Space Novum Lodge. And then, of course, we've got Darren A. Lainers. He's the area education officer over the western area in Illinois. And he's also a Toric Award winner for the Illinois Lodge of Research. That is a once-a-year annual award that doesn't have to be given out, but it can be. And he was the recipient just a couple of years ago. We've got 2 more speaker announcements happening. You can look for one tomorrow and another in the following weeks. But it's sure to be an awesome event. We've got a VIP ticket for $120. And that is going to get you access to, of course, all the speakers. We are not having a virtual option this year. That is by design. And we will record the presentations, however, and VIPs will get a link to check out those recordings, which will remain exclusive for a period of about 6 months. And then we will let them out on the MasonicCon Chicago YouTube channel. Also, what you get with that VIP ticket is some swag, right? We've got an assortment of awesome things that have been procured, even made by yours truly, that will be going into the swag bag for you. You can look for a pin and a coin, among other things. And then, of course, we've got a general admission ticket. That's only $80, and you get the same exact thing, except no swag and no access to the recordings immediately, right? So MasonicCon Chicago is happening September 16th. At the time of this recording, that's 68 days away. 9 hours, 25 minutes, and about 15 seconds. Head on over to MasonicConChicago.com. We'll have links in the show notes to grab your tickets, and I hope to see you there. This week, we are continuing our multi-part series on Manly P. Hall's The Occult Anatomy of Man. If you've not caught up to this particular series, I recommend you start with part 1, which was episode number 597. We did part 2, which was 598. And we did part 3 in episode 600. It was broken up there. We had an interview with Worshipful Brother Joe Martinez in episode 599. This is episode number 601, as I mentioned. And again, we are continuing The Occult Anatomy of Man, part 4. The Infernal Worlds. At the base of the spine is located the throne of the Lord of Form, commonly called Jehovah and Shiva. The Linga is his symbol. He rides the great bull of earthiness. His daughter is death and destruction, yet he is not a thing of evil. He builds the bodies which give us the power to function in the lower worlds. He crystallizes them around lines of force. Geometry is the skeleton, and all the bodies which he builds are geometric angles, crystallized into rocks and stones. Gradually, the crystallization which brings bodies into the world causes them to become too dense and unyielding to respond to the subtle impressions from the spiritual consciousness. Slowly, they turn to stone, and death is the result of the same cause that brought the body into the world. The early races of the earth worshipped the procreative attributes of life. They felt that the highest expression of life was the power of giving still another life to the world. Therefore, the principle of life-giving was personified into a deity who gave life to all things, or rather brought into manifestation the latent life which cannot grow or unfold in the physical world without the vehicle of dense substance. To the occultist, birth is death, and death is an awakening. The mystics of ancient days taught that to be born into the physical world was to enter a tomb, for no other plane of nature is so unresponsive, so limited as the earth world. Time and distance were prison bars chaining the soul to narrow environments. Heat and cold tormented the soul, age deprived it of its faculties, and man's life was but a preparation for death. As life is lived under the shadow of death, they taught that it is a mockery, a hollow thing, gilded to the careless eye but tarnished and worn-eaten upon close examination. The physical body became the sepulchre, tired tomb, the place of burial in which the spirit lay awaiting the day of liberation when, as a virgin spark, it should arise again from the broken urn of clay. Therefore, in all the religions of the world, we have the lower world as a black pit into which Yama, the lord of the underworld, hurls the souls of the damned to suffer in a hell of their own creation. For it is true that each race makes from its own nature the demons which torment it. Here, Typhon, the Egyptian god of destruction, with the body of a hog and the head of a crocodile, awaits with yawning jaws to devour those who have failed to make proper use of life's opportunities. Among most peoples, the demon is symbolized as part animal, part human. He dwells in the animal nature of man, and those who are controlled by their appetites, their likes and dislikes, their hates and fears, need no further damnation. They have built their own hell and are experiencing its torments. The generative system is gradually being absorbed into the brain, and the man of the next great world period will generate its progenies, or at least form vehicles for them, through the larynx, which is the organ of the spoken word. We are told that a small etheric body, which will later be the organ of positive reproduction, is gradually being built near the larynx. Ultimately, human beings will become capable of raising the spinal fire through the Sushumna canal. This is an evolutionary process, however, covering a long period of time. The physical body is supposed to be under the control of the moon, which rules the liquids of the earth. The moon was the last incarnation of the earth spirit, and the human race passed through its state of animal consciousness in the etheric body of the moon lord. The lunar spirits are called the ancestors, and are known to Christians as angels. These beings have control of the generative powers of animal and man. The life coming into incarnation often chooses its future vehicle many years before it appears in the world. It is said that the etheric germ is placed in the body of the parent as long as 20 years before the child comes into the world. This is the result of its search for an environment especially suited to its spiritual and material needs. Certain occult schools have taught that the spiritual consciousness of man was not fixed in any point of the body, but was in whatever part of man his thoughts dwelt. We know that there are three worlds where man may dwell. The first is his mental world, where he may live surrounded by his thoughts, his dreams, and his aspirations. The second is his human world, where he may be one of the great middle class, which thinks a little, eats a little, sleeps a little, and worries unceasingly. The third possible home is his animal world, where he may dwell in the midst of passions, lusts, and hates, which burn his soul and consume his body. The history of primitive races shows that they have risen through all these stages until at last a few have become truly thinking creatures. The blood of every man is individual. When crystallizing, it forms into geometric patterns which differ with every person, so that by means of blood analysis, a far surer system could be evolved for crime detection than either the Bertillon or fingerprint systems. The story of man's soul is written in the blood. The position he occupies is in evolution. His hopes and his fears are all imprinted on the etheric forms which flow through his bloodstream. Until red blood came into the body, the spirit of man could not enter. but hovered over the body, attached to it by an electric thread. By studying crickets, grasshoppers, and similar small creatures clairvoyantly, it is possible to observe impulses from the little globes hovering over their bodies which result in the primitive motion and sense which they demonstrate. Therefore, it is said that the actual line between the vegetable and the animal is drawn with the coming of red blood. Consequently, certain small fishes, mollusks, etc., are technically vegetables, although not recognized as such by science. The liver is the key to the red blood. Lucifer's red garments derive their color from the blood, while the word Lucifer means a carrier of light, or heat, and is a name for blood. For this reason, he is the spirit of temptation. In the Christian mysteries, the piercing of the liver of Christ by the spear of the centurion is especially mystical, while Prometheus, the friend of man, hanging upon the peak of Mount Caucasus with a vulture gnawing at its liver, is the same myth expressed in the symbolism of ancient Greece. It is further interesting to note the relation between the words live and liver, for to have a liver is to live. Along the same line, we may note that the word live spelled backwards becomes evil, and the word lived becomes devil. This peculiar relationship is found not only in English, but to a slightly less noticeable degree in several languages. When we take up this, however, we become involved in the study of Kabbalism, which is the analysis of the symbolic meaning of words. Red is the color of blood and the key of the liver, and its effects upon animals is very noticeable. It irritates, excites, and in some cases actually causes animals to go mad. Therefore, it is often used in making the capes worn during bullfights. These, the fighters flaunt in the bull's face, and trouble usually follows. The use of red lights is not uncommon in black magic. Evil magicians use them to materialize specters, while medical science has already discovered that red light is a strong irritant when applied to the human body. During anger and hate, the astral aura of man becomes streaked with red flames, very closely resembling thunderbolts. Very often, the base of the spine glows with a murky red light, symbolic of hate, passion, or anger. This red light, or glow, burning eternally at the base of the spine, has given rise to the story of hellfire and damnation. But the preacher has failed to remind the laity that they carry their own hell around with them, wherever they go. The red power is said to be broken from the white light of the sun through the body of Samael, the spirit of Mars. This is the cause of the red glow in the heavens. Mars is the god of war, wrangling, hate, and dissension. He was the patron deity of the Roman Empire, whose uniformed soldiers were red as a symbol of his sway. Following the lead of this patron saint, they conquered the world and then fell upon the swords with which they had murdered others. While red is the color of the body, yellow is regarded as the color of the soul. For this reason, the Buddhists and world saviors are usually symbolized as being surrounded with a golden nimbus or halo. This light is the yellow robe, also the light bearing witness to the darkness, of which St. John wrote. This light, flooding through the third ventricle, represents the Shekinah of the Jews, which hovers over the mercy seat as a pact between God and man. Yellow is a vitalizer, a life giver. Therefore, the golden-haired sun and its personification, the Christ, are both givers of life. Devitalization may be successfully treated by exposing the spleen to sunlight. Blue, the highest of the three primary colors, is the color given to the Father. It is a relaxing, restful color, especially valuable in the treatment of insanity and obsession. It is difficult for black magicians to function successfully in blue light. Its affinity to the mind is very evident, and it gathers as an electric sea in the pineal gland, as an extract from all of the spiritual qualities of human nature. The blue heart to every flame was said to symbolize the invisible Father behind the glowing sun. In the words of Christ, "He that hath seen me hath seen the Father. I am in the Father, and the Father are in me." The use of colors and symbolism is very interesting. The green dragon, whom the heroes of mythology usually slay, represents the earth. The white armor is purified physical body, The black magician is darkness and uncertainty. All colors have a symbolic value, and great lessons can be learned from the study of the application of these values to occultism. While discussing the subject of occult anatomy and physiology, we must stop for a moment to give credit to the alchemists and Rosicrucians who, during the Middle Ages, concealed the study of occult anatomy by dressing up the organs of the human body in the form of retorts and alchemical vessels. One of the great exponents said in substance, quote, "Our chemistry is not with chemicals as you know them, but with certain secret vessels, or internal organs, and spiritual chemicals which are invisible to the ordinary individual. We do not believe in torturing chemicals, combining them to form gases, vapors, or seething masses. For chemicals, like men, can suffer when brought into unkind relationship with each other." The alchemical furnace was the human body. The fire that burned in it was at the base of the spine. The chimney was the spinal cord up which the vapors passed to be gathered again and distilled into the brain. This was indeed a secret system brought to Europe from the Far East, where for centuries it has been considered the highest form of religion. We may call these occult truths the principles of operative spirituality, in contradistinction to modern religion, which is made entirely of speculative theories. People do not dream that religion is physiological, nor would they believe that their salvation depends entirely on scientific uses of the life elements and forces within their own bodies. But in spite of all of that, may be said to the contrary. Such is the case. During the next few years, much will be done to enlighten man concerning the secret workings of his own parts and members. It is very interesting to note the similitude existing between the incarnations or appearances in the world of the great avatar Vishnu and the changes which take place in the human embryo previous to birth. This brings us to our next subject, occult embryology. And that's the end of part 4, The Infernal Worlds. Really taking a deep dive a little here on the idea of colors and what they could mean. There are some antiquated ideas in here about the crystallization and forms and geometric patterns which differ from person to person, and in terms of, like, you know, actually letting blood dry and things. As always in Manly P. Hall's work, there are some somewhat loose connections that he makes, and also some statements that he makes that I take a little bit of an issue with, but it's not, you know, outside the realm of what was normal in the spiritualist society that these things were written for. For instance, when he says, "This peculiar relationship is found not only in English, but to a slightly less noticeable degree in several languages." He doesn't actually tell us what they are, and then he gives himself an out by saying slightly less noticeable, and then he says several languages, which, you know, nobody's really going to look that up probably and take note of it. But it was interesting nonetheless. And, of course, we all seem to appreciate at least some part of Manly P. Hall's brilliance here. As always, he does seem to speak a little bit in that Twilight talk, you know, that he is so famed for, but is, in my opinion, is much easier to understand than somebody like Albert Pike, even when you're looking at the esoteric nature of things. And, again, so much of Pike in Morals and Dogma we can see has been borrowed from Eliphas Levi. And so, anyway, I hope you enjoyed this reading. That is it for this week. I want to thank our producers, fellows, contributors, and legacy partners one more time. If you'd like to be a help to this program and assist those interested in Freemasonry by finding quality Masonic education that they can access each week, regardless of whether or not their lodge does education, you know, that was the original impetus behind this podcast, was so many of us didn't have education in lodge, then turn them on to the WCY podcast. Turn your friends on to the show and consider, if you would, supporting us and being a part of this education initiative. One more time, head on over to MasonicConChicago.com. Grab your tickets. If you use OLP, there will be an event page for that also. You can check that out under Space Novum. I think it's generally searchable to anybody. And then if you'd also like to use through Amity, I am going to be working with Amity to add MasonicCon Chicago in there as well. So check it out. Get your tickets. Don't wait. The more tickets we sell, the more things we can offer and take care of those things in advance so that the day of the event, You get all your awesome swag. You can do some great shopping. And, of course, hear some amazing speakers. That's it for this week. Thanks for listening. Before I close it out, I want to give a big shout-out to the fellows at TMR who surprised me with the latest episode, which I thought was going to be covering apotheosis, but instead they surprised me with a thing celebrating how the WCY podcast has been around for 600 episodes, and that was really special and very touching. So I have to thank John, Jason, and Joe, and Nick, and Mike Hambricht, and everybody who's ever been on the show or even watched it for tuning into that one and making that episode happen. It was totally unexpected. It happened on the same day that I ended up having to put my fourth son, if you want to call him that, Einstein, my main man, my best boy of 11 years, he had to transition to the next adventure. And I was not feeling great that day, but my brothers picked me up and surprised me in a way that was just wild. So you made it a little easier, brothers. And as we close out this week, I just want to say, give your pups an extra pet from me this week. If you got cats, same thing, and that's it. So, until next week, stay on the level. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson, saying thanks for listening, and Einstein, if you're out there, thanks for 11 amazing years, buddy. We miss you and love you.
You've been listening to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry with your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Be sure to join us for our next edition.
WCY Media.
That's it. Here's your...